I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Now let's get to the game that we're recording right after. Game two of this series, Kodai Senga, Marcus Stroman. First of all, Kodai Senga is only pitching because the Mets, and this is not on Senga. I want to make this very clear. This is a Met issue. The Mets are deathly afraid of Kodai Senga, not only pitching on regular rest, but even with 5 days rest. So they make the decision probably a while ago, but they announce it to us a couple of hours before game one that they're flip-flopping McGill and Senga. And as I've said before, you can run, but you can't hide. While Senga won't pitch again on this road trip, which is a good thing because he sucks on the road, when he comes back to city, again, there's going to be a situation where he's going to have to pitch on 4 days rest unless the Mets call somebody up because he's now scheduled to pitch Tuesday of next week at Citi Field against the Phillies and then would have to come back and pitch Sunday at Citi Field against the Toronto Blue Jays. Will they find a way to delay that? Maybe. It's certainly possible. But in terms of how Kodai pitched against Chicago, there's a part of me that's very, very impressed by Senga, even in a performance as shaky as this one. And what I mean by that is he walks five guys in five innings. Nobody's happy with that. He gave up six hits to go along with that. He committed a balk. There were tons of base runners. And yet he was mostly, because he did kind of give up some big hits in the third inning, specifically the double to Saya Suzuki and the RBI single to Mike Tauchman. But he was able to make the big pitch more times than not that got him out of these brutal situations. The best example of that being in the fourth inning in which he walks the 8 and 9 hitter back to back to start the inning and commits a balk. So you're facing the top of the order, including one of the toughest guys in the league to strike out this side of Luis Arraez with second and third, nobody out. And he got out of it. And I give him credit for that. And what he was able to do, which Tyler McGill was not able to do, is he kept them in the game. He did. Now, I'm not trying to throw bouquets at this guy because 5 innings, 3 runs is not good. I want to make that clear. It's not good enough. But I am impressed by his ability, and we've seen this from day one in spring training, of his ability to make that big pitch and at least not let go of the rope. And I think the other thing that hurts Senga, and this is going to sound like an excuse, but this is an observation. The fact that the Met offense could not muster any kind of long inning against Marcus Stroman cannot help. You've got a guy throwing a million pitches, which is Senga's fault, by the way. I'll make that clear. Like, going 3-2 on everybody, that's a Kodai Senga issue. And his command has not been impressive over his first 8 major league starts. Now it's 9 major league starts, okay? He's got to cut down on the walks. He cannot go 3-2 to every single hitter. So this is a Senga issue. But he's throwing basically 25 pitches an inning, and then the Met offense goes out there, and Marcus Stroman has a 5-pitch inning. And that cannot help. And here's where it really jumped out at me. So he gets through the second inning, Senga. He puts the first two guys on base walked Suzuki, gave up a hit to Tauchman, and he gets out of it. And he was pretty fortunate because the Matt Mervis line drive was a rocket shot. May have been the hardest hit ball of the game, but it was right at Starling Marte, and he fights through the second inning. Stroman in the third, I'm not even kidding, must have thrown, I'm sorry, in the second inning, Stroman must have thrown five pitches. So he comes out and barely breaks a sweat in the second inning. And that cannot help. It cannot help that Kodai Senga is throwing 30 pitches an inning, and then Marcus Stroman responds by, here's a five-pitch inning. And it happened a lot in this game, a lot, where, you know, I'm just sitting at home watching it, and I was behind a little bit where I was skipping commercials, so you really just see the baseball. Dude, it's like Senga's out there for 85% of the time. And then here's Stroman, bing, 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 see you later. Bing, 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 okay, we're fine. But look, this isn't good enough. I think we all admit that. This performance by Senga is not good enough. And I'm starting to think, because we're gaining a sample size, that for whatever reason, and I can't explain the reason, I'm just going to give you what I'm noticing, the guy just sucks on the road. He's a different pitcher at Citi Field as compared to road stadiums. Why? I don't know. I can't offer like the reason. All I know is 7 ERA versus like 1.5 ERA is pretty noticeable. But the problem is the offense, because outside of our guy Francisco Alvarez breaking the wind in the third inning with that two-run home run, what did this offense do? They went 1-2-3 in the first, 1-2-3 in the second. They got a little infield hit from Alonso in the fourth, and then unfortunately the double play where Pete's trying to steal a base, has no idea what's going on. He slides, and you could see that in the camera. When he slides in a second, I'm worried. Because now he gets up and has no idea where he is, and it turns into a double play. Then in the sixth, they get a leadoff hit from Francisco Alvarez, double play. In the seventh, a 1-2-3 inning. Marcus Stroman threw 69 pitches, nice, in only seven innings. This offense did nothing. Nothing in this game outside of the Alvarez home run. In fact, how many times did the baseball leave the infield against Marcus Stroman? The Canna hit, the Alvarez home run, because the other hits they got in this game, and they only had two others, were infield hits. So they did nothing offensively. And then they had their moment of truth in the eighth inning. And look, it's tough to kill Alvarez because Alvarez hit the home run and Alvarez had the infield hit. He came up 2-for-2. But obviously, when he steps up in the eighth against Stroman with first and third, one out, down by two, we're all thinking the same thing, which is, just don't ground into a double play. Like, if you can get a sacrifice fly, even though the Mets are still down by a run, you feel like, okay, chipped away, top of the order coming up in the ninth. But the double play was the ultimate kick in the balls. And again, what are we're not going to kill Alvarez. Alvarez has been great. He was great in this game, whether it was defensively, and obviously supplied the only offense with the two-run home run. But first and third, one out in the eighth. I think we all know when Alvarez hits that right at Swanson, this game is over. It's an easy double play, and you could turn the lights out, and they did nothing in the ninth inning, which was pretty disappointing that this offense with the top of the order coming up against Mark Leiter, despite how much of a buzzkill it was for Alvarez to ground into the double play, you still got a shot. You're down by two runs. You're not exactly facing Trevor Hoffman in his prime, and the Met offense went down 1-2-3, and here we are. Here we are, two runs, four runs in two games. They've had basically no big hits. They're 0-for-9 with runners in scoring position in this series. They've done nothing offensively outside of an Alvarez home run and Alonso home run. And oh, by the way, their starting pitching's been mediocre, and the five-game winning streak's turned into a two-game losing streak. How do we feel? You feeling good, Pete?
No, I feel terrible. And actually, I'm going to take that back before what I said about McNeil batting. Let Vientos bat in that spot. You want to know why? Because Alvarez has been the one guy who's actually hit big home runs in big spots. And that's because every time earlier in the season when he came up, it was always felt like he was in a big spot. So you got to learn. So now I'm thinking, like, you know what? Vientos should have just stayed in the game. Let him hit, and he'll learn for the next time, because ultimately these guys are going to be in these big spots. Listen, like you said, it didn't come through today with Alvarez, the double play, but he did the damage early in the game.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Yeah, I would normally agree with you if I don't have Jeff McNeil on my bench. I think what changes things is that I had such a good option on my bench, but on most nights, I think we would all prefer Vientos just DHs. And so in a normal world, your bench would be Gary Sanchez, Tommy Pham, Eduardo Escobar, and Daniel Vogelbach. And if that's your bench, I completely agree with you. If that's my bench with an ideal starting lineup, then yes, you let Vientos hit. So the only reason I disagree is because you had that rare exception of McNeil being available. But you're right about Alvarez, and I'm very encouraged by what's gone on over the last 2 days with the reporting on him. What I mean by that is Will Salmon, I think is his name, from The Athletic, wrote this great piece about Alvarez that was very complimentary from coaching staff guys. Jeremy Barnes, the hitting coach, said he's got the greatest growth mindset he's ever seen, which is a very big compliment. It's almost like things are leaking out to show you how happy everybody is with Francisco Alvarez. And that doesn't sound like an organization that has any interest in not only sending him down, but taking at-bats away from him and taking starts away from him. I think he's going to be the everyday catcher for this team, even when Narvaez and Nito are healthy. How they handle the roster, we'll discuss it in a second. But I think he's going to play most of the time. While 2 out of 3 games may not be enough for a lot of people listening, and I get that, it's still the majority of the time. It's still 67% of the time, okay? And I do think it's possible, though we haven't seen it yet, that Alvarez could work his way into more DH opportunities if they decide to carry 3 catchers once they start to get healthy. But I agree that Alvarez's growth has occurred from playing, from being out there. But a lot of that is that they didn't really have a choice. Tomas Nito made the choice for them. He was so bad offensively that they had to go out and play Francisco Alvarez. The Vientos thing, we're not there yet. And it's frustrating. I'm with you. Like, why is he not in the lineup on Wednesday night against Marcus Stroman? Why is he not? Mark Vientos was hitting right-handed pitching at AAA. And more than that, Daniel Vogelbach has failed. Like, none of us want to hear anymore from Buck. Well, Vogie's a good option, too. He's not a good option, too. Like, I've sat here arguing and defending him, and the reason I defended him is because I had the data to back me up. I did. That data doesn't exist anymore. I'm not going to defend him. I don't have a freaking agenda. I just try to call like it is and be fair. Well, if we're all being fair, Daniel Vogelbach has failed. He hasn't done enough. And while I may not be on the DFA train, I am on the train that he cannot be the everyday designated hitter. You have to give Vientos a few weeks, probably more than that, to either sink or swim. And it's difficult to do that when you're not giving him everyday at-bats. But that lineup going into Tuesday, and this is going to be a battle every game now. Buck's going to be under fire for these lineups, and we're going to demand the young guys to play. And what makes the Mets look so stupid is the young guys are actually supplying any semblance of offense we see sometimes, like we saw on Wednesday when Alvarez hits the 2-run home run.
And there's another thing too, bro. I know that you're protecting him a little bit. I'm not saying you're protecting
him. Who am I protecting?
Kodai Senga. That guy, I'm sorry, he's had 3 good starts so far. 3. That's it. Rack him up. 3 good starts. That is not good enough. We've talked about how many base runners he allows between walks and between hits. And you could say that he battles and he finds a way to get through innings. That is not good enough with everybody else on this team only getting you to 5 innings. I mean, it's not good anymore.
Because it's not.
Then you have Drew Smith coming in the 6th inning, blowing the game open.
It's not good enough. I agree with you on that. I'm treating Senga very much like a young player. And I know he's making a lot of money, so that's difficult for a lot of people to do. But as somebody that's new to the major leagues and a real unknown to all of us, I'm being very open-minded as I learn about him. And I think that there is an adjustment to pitching in Major League Baseball. So I can't just expect him to dominate right away. Now, again, that doesn't mean I'm happy with 5 innings, 3 runs, but I'm being honest that I'm encouraged by his ability to get the big out when he needs to. Now, that's all I'm saying. And the talk about the amount of pitches he threw tonight or on Wednesday and how quickly he had to come back out is not a defense of him. It's an observation. It did not help him that the Met offense did so little. It reminds me in the NFL where you've got a defense that's not playing great. They're battling. They're on the field for a while, but they're holding the opposing offense to a field goal, right? And so they're doing an okay job. And then the offense comes on the field, Zach Wilson, and there's a 3-and-out. And now the exhausted defense has to go back on the field. It's not like the defense is playing their asses off, but it doesn't help the defense that after a 10-play drive that took 7 minutes, when they finally got off the field and held the opponent to 3, they got to go back on the field 30 seconds later. Doesn't help.
That I get, okay. But it's not like the New York Jets were like, hey, do you mind, can we start this game rather than Sunday and push it to like Wednesday? Can we push it back so we can give Zach Wilson more reps?
But here's the thing about that, and this is a broader debate that I've had with people concerning baseball and basketball, okay? I don't understand how with maintenance days in the NBA, we attack the players. But when there's maintenance days in baseball, we attack the manager. When really it's organizations in basketball and baseball who make those decisions. Kodai Senga has nothing to do with him getting extra days. Gary Cohen said it on the broadcast the other day. Senga wants to pitch on 4 days rest. He's ready to go. It's kind of like when Kevin Durant, I'll use him as an example, even though I can't stand him anymore. When he doesn't play in a game for a maintenance day, you think he doesn't want to play? No, it's the organization saying, hey, we're going to sit him. Jeff McNeil the other day did not play because McNeil said he needed an off day. The organization said it. That's what's happening with Kodai Senga. He has nothing to do with this extra day BS the organization's pulling. That's on Billy Epler and Buck Showalter.
So can I ask a question? Because I honestly, I want to know. I don't think you know, but I'm curious. Is it because they're worried about his performance on short rest, or are they worried about injury on short rest?
No, I think it's probably performance because, look, when you come to the United States after pitching in Japan, there's a lot of adjustments you have to make. Obviously, the lineups, the stadiums you're playing in, the baseball is different, the language barrier, which should not be understated. Imagine being dropped in the middle of Japan and having to do your job and you only know English. Like, there's a factor here, and I admit that. And I think one of the other factors is that in Japan, you don't pitch on 4 days rest. So I think it's simply them being really, really cautious. And I would say it's similar to how cautious they are with prospects. The Mets under Billy Epler have been super cautious with prospects. We've screamed about it a lot here on Rico Bronya. I think it's similar that they're being very, very, very careful. So I don't think it's injury related. I think it's more, will he be effective? There has to be a day, though, where he does it, where he pitches on 4 days rest. And I think it's going to happen on the next homestand. But eventually, it has to occur. Because can I ask you a dumb question? If the They're Mets are question. Fortunate enough to be a postseason team, and they are playing in the divisional series or the National League Championship Series, are you going to be able to pitch Kodai Senga on 4 days rest? Or are you going to have to manipulate the rotation in the postseason so that Senga needs a fifth or sixth day? Like, you can't do that. You're not always given the ability to do that come October. So you got to find out now in May and June, while it sucks to lose these games and it sucks to have Senga nurse his way through 5 innings, poop and get off the pot. Like, eventually, you just got to sit down and squeeze. You know, Pete?
Well, maybe they'll plan on having him start game one and game seven.
That's entirely possible.